So very similar to how we've managed with some moderate success to combat cigarette smoking, making it can't smoke in buildings, have to smoke in this area, not socially acceptable anymore, can't smoke in restaurants. I guess it's creating the negative association more than the positive one to change the viewpoint. Because if we're saying that we're creating a situation where the food is made to seem like fun, you can anticipate it, it's, you know, you're going to the food courts, it's a food extravaganza, the view of that has to change. It's not just the physiology, it's all the environment around you that has to be conducive to negating a lot of that reward center so that you're not eating as much.
I think you've just said it very eloquently. You know, the last part of the book talks about something called a critical perceptual shift. How did we win, or at least make inroads into tobacco and the reduction of smoking? We didn't have laws. We didn't have regulation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until two weeks ago in the States when the president signed the bill allowing FDA to regulate tobacco for the first time. What did we do? What was the great success? We didn't change the product. The product is the same. We used to view the product as something that was glamorous, sexy, something that you wanted, something that was going to make you feel better. It was, as scientists call it, positively valence.
Right.
What did we do? Now we look at the product for what it is, a deadly, disgusting product. It's not socially acceptable. It has become negatively viewed. What do I do to a reinforcer that's positively viewed? I approach it. What do I do to a reinforcer that's negatively viewed? I avoid it. But food is, tobacco's easy.
Right.
We can live without tobacco. How do we deal with food? We need food. Can't demonize food. Food has to be pleasurable, has to be enjoyable. So how do we deal with food and this excessive, impulsive, and compulsive eating that arises from food? And how do we change how we view food, right? And which foods are we going to change how we view? My sense is we have to start viewing the foods, these big portions. Do I really want that? We have to start viewing the foods that are layered and loaded with fat, sugar, and salt. I mean, it's starting in Canada, right?
Yes.
I mean, on every corner, is there a Tim Hortons? I mean,
it's
starting.
There's a Tim Hortons everywhere.
and what is it?
You've got the nice soft donuts and coffee, and it portrays itself as being. It also wraps itself up in the Canadian flag. It's considered to be a Canadian company, so people have an affinity for the company.
What's in the coffee?
There's the caffeine.
Yeah, and what else?
And you've got milk and sugar or cream.
So you've got fat and sugar?
That's right.
If you look at Starbucks in the United States, if you just look at the evolution, you started putting it on every corner. People drank coffee in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Stores were empty in the afternoon. What did they start adding to the menu?
Oh, they added the creamy top stuff, the whipped cream on top, or the cream, or the extra sugar.
The drinks that were high in fat and sugar, right?
Yeah, and then they had the cookies and the cakes as well.
Fat and sugar
on
every corner, available 24/7. They broke down the barriers. What you've had in Canada is you've had barriers. Sure, you eat highly palatable foods sometimes, but you ate in meals. You didn't eat between meals all the time. You're starting to break that down. You didn't walk down the street eating. You didn't eat at business meetings. You didn't eat in lecture halls. Is that going to change?
It's very possible that this is going to change now.
And the consequences. So in some ways, Canada is a good laboratory to see, whether what we've seen in the States happen is going to happen in Canada too. And that's my concern. Are you able to keep the brakes on?
Now, with regards to putting the brakes on, is there, there is a bit of a debate now, but the debate is more weighted towards trying this out, where, we're talking about trying to change the perception of foods. And when someone is presented with a food without any other information other than, here's the food, tastes great, has salt, fat, sugar, large portion size, but that's all you have. You don't have anything else in front of you, as opposed to menus that are listing out how much fat, how many calories, how much salt. Does that help in any way to at least start in a direction that gives people a bit more control over what they eat?
I think that it does. I was down in the Google cafeteria. They give all their employees free food, and the cafeterias, they're known for their, what they serve. And it was interesting. In front of every dish, there was either a red placard, a yellow placard, or a green placard.
Mm-hmm.
The red, just take a little bit. Yellow, eat a moderate amount. Green, eat as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, it had an effect on me and what I put on my plate.
Hmm. It's very similar to what Brian Wansink was telling us with he did this one small experiment in a school cafeteria where just the labeling of the food, what he called a tropical smoothie, right? Nice name, tropical smoothie, was really vegetable juice. When he had it as vegetable juice, the kids didn't take it. When they saw rainbow smoothie, that was the word, rainbow smoothie, they bought it all up. So I would imagine that it's also, as you've mentioned, it's the associations that we have with food, how it sounds. It sounds really wonderful. I'm gonna buy that.
How we perceive the stimulus. Social norms have an effect on our behaviors. And again, what our perception is that my friend? Is that something I want?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that something I don't want? The emotional gloss of advertising. Advertising has a real effect on people. We don't want to admit it, but it does.
This is also, in some, I would say it's even, there seems to be a synergy, but not in a good way, between the diets or the foods and how they're presented in our society, coupled with everybody and their brother that is making a book on how to combat that to lose the weight.
So let's talk about diet.
Yeah.
Right. Diets are not going to work. Why not? Once you have the neural circuitry laid down, that old learning, that old neural circuitry, can you for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days lose weight? Sure. Will the weight come off? Yes, you can deprive yourself. But if you've not laid down new neural circuitry, new learning on top of that old learning, if you've, and you go back into your environment mm-hmm. and you continue to get bombarded with cues and stimuli, and you still have that old neural circuitry, what's going to happen? You're going to gain it back.
Absolutely. And this creates it's almost like this is, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would say you've got the companies making this food that, and designing food courts and designing all kinds of positive reinforcement to eat the food in cahoots with the people that are then trying to get you to lose the weight that you've gained from eating this, and around it goes in a circle.
We spend billions of dollars chasing something that is not real. But understand that, look, the reason I wrote the book was to explain to people why it's so hard to resist and try to give them tools. That was the reason I wrote The End of Overeating.
Right.
Understand how this works. Right? Based on past learning and memory, you get cued, your brain gets activated, you get aroused, you have this release, you eat in order to release that arousal. Right? And then the next time you get cued, you do it again. So you're in this never-ending cycle. Is there any satisfaction more than just a momentary, the pleasure of that moment? Is there any long-lasting satisfaction? You're constantly chasing this cycle. So we think we're eating for comfort. But what comfort is it when we set ourselves up for this cycle in the long term?
You get misery in the long term.
And you add diets, and diets are not going to work. So what's the greatest gift you can give somebody if you're a parent? To try to help your kid from having this neural circuitry laid down, because once the neural circuitry gets laid down, it lasts a lifetime.